Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN and NPR Music. I'm David Dye. We're very happy to welcome Seattle-based singer-songwriter Laura Veers to the World Cafe in conversation with the cafe's Tracy Tannenbaum. Laura recently released an exquisitely orchestrated new album, July Flame, produced by her producer and partner, Tucker Martine, with whom she's expecting a baby. Tracy began by asking Laura about a period of writer's block she experienced before the new album and if she had ever experienced that before.
I'd definitely experienced creative blocks before and worked through them in a variety of ways, but those ways that I had been that I had learned about didn't work this time, and I was struggling for inspiration. That was the main issue. I was struggling for inspiration, and that was a frustrating feeling. And this is my 7th full-length record, so maybe that just happens to people over time if they're doing the same thing over and over. It's hard to make it new and fresh and exciting and have that beginner's mind. And I think that's mainly what I was coming up against. So I had to push a little harder and write more songs than normal to get through that and find my way into a place of surprise and wonder. And I eventually got there and was very happy about it, but there was some soul searching that had to happen in the process.
And what were those ways that you were that you traditionally tried that weren't working this time, where you just kind of came up against a wall?
Well, one technique I've used is just to write as many songs as possible. And then just hope that a good one comes out. And I felt like I kept writing, and the good ones weren't there. And so I had to try other things, like retuning the instrument, pretending like it's not a guitar, going to the piano, playing the banjo ukulele, like using different instruments that I don't know how to play to come up with new melodic ideas, and listening to other people's music, learning lots of songs. I learned songs by R.E.M. I learned songs by Leonard Cohen and Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, and just trying to end the Beatles. And I think that's a great way to get out of a block if you're in one, is to learn other people's music, because it gets incorporated into your body and comes out later when you least expect it, because you've done that chord change now. You've done a C sharp minor to an E and it sounds cool. Whereas before I may never have done that particular chord change. So learning other people's music was another way to get through it.
That's amazing. Were you ever nervous? Like, here you are, you were trying ideas that had worked for you before, but they weren't working now?
I was very frustrated, and I have a friend who's a writer, and she's been a writer for 10 years, and she was having similar kinds of issues, like just struggling with her calling and whether this is really what she should be doing and feeling blocked. And we would go on long walks and pound our heads against the wall, but eventually we both came through. She's writing a book now. She's like off and running, and I feel like this album turned out really well. But there are definitely times in an artist's life where it's not going that great, and you have to have faith that if you keep pursuing it, something's going to come eventually. Something good will come.
Well, July Flame is really a beautiful album. So let's hear some of it. What do you want to start out with?
We'll start out with a song called Wide-Eyed Legless. We'll be right back.
Laura Veers with the Hall of Flames. That's Wide-Eyed Legless from her new album, July Flame. And can you introduce the Hall of Flames to us, please?
Sure. We have Eric Anderson on the bass here and singing, Alex Guy on the viola and singing, and Nelson Kempf on the guitar and singing.
So I know you were in a punk band in college, and listening to your music now, even though it definitely has an edge, there's really this serene quality to it. It's hard for me to imagine you playing punk. What were you drawn to back then?
Well, I was a 20-year-old, so I definitely had to get my ya-yas out somehow. But I felt really inspired by the Riot Girl movement and the do-it-yourself movement, and the idea that anyone can play instruments and anyone can start bands and anyone can tour and release records. And that was just a really new idea for me coming from Colorado Springs, where there really is no all-ages music scene and no place for young people to find out about what's going on in the music world. Now I'm sure it's very different with the internet. You know, like you can find out, your kids these days have access to the wider world of music in a way that I certainly didn't at that age. So maybe it would have been different, but I didn't have any role models at all. And when I moved to Minnesota and went to college, I found out about this Riot Girl scene and thought it was the coolest thing ever and just wanted to be a part of that, and started an all-girl punk band. And I was the guitar player, songwriter, so I didn't have to do a lot of like the screaming. There was this wonderful front woman whose name was Dava Hester, and she's a friend of mine. She lives in Port Townsend, Washington now, and she was just like a born rock star. Like if she had kept going, she would be like on the cover of Spin magazine today. But just really had that spirit of like aggression and vitality that I really admire, and just like ran all over the stage screaming and like getting twisted up in chords and stuff.
But you took up songwriting in earnest while you were training to be a geologist and you were in China. Is that accurate?
Sort of. I mean, it's a good story. I was in China working on a geology trip. I was the field assistant and realized I didn't really like geology. I was too far from home. And so I had my guitar and was feeling like morose and wrote some songs. And the early songs that I was writing were joke songs, like just a way of kind of coping and turning difficult situations into jokes. And but then as I amassed a bunch of songs, I thought, well, this is really fun. I want to do that. And then I started writing more serious or thoughtful or introspective songs. And then it just progressed from there. I started doing open mics and moved to Seattle and made an album and did some house shows. And, you know, it just kept going from there.
So when you say they were joke songs, do you mean literally they were kind of novelty songs?
Yes.
Like they were.
About my boyfriend's nose. One was called It's Your Nose, I Like. And then another one was about my geology professor, like really nerdy stuff, like just using geological terms. And her name was Mary Savina, and there's a glacier called the Malaspina. So like playing around with rhymes like that. It was just a way of like having fun with little puzzles I was coming up with.
Was it a revelation at all to discover that you could put your love of the natural world, and I know I'm getting back to that, but it does run throughout your music. Was it a revelation to discover that you could channel that into your music and that you didn't have to be a geologist to do it?
I wouldn't say revelation as much as I think there's probably some connection to be made between my science background and my interest in art and like my enjoyment of fusing the two. And probably my parents have something to do with that too, because my dad's a physics professor and my mom's like a very crafty kind of arts type. So probably the mixture of those two has something to do with it as well.
Hmm. Laura Veers is our guest today on the World Cafe, and her new album is called July Flame. Where do you want to go next, Laura?
We are going to play a song called Sun is King.
Great. That's Laura Veers, along with the Hall of Flames, singing Sun is King from her new album, July Flame. That's a beautiful song, Laura. Really,
thank you.
So lovely. What were you thinking about when you wrote that song?
That one was about greed. I was thinking about, honestly, the economic crisis we were in and how certain people in this world believe that the world revolves around them and really... their reign, their R-E-I-G-N will never stay. They're going to fall. So it was sort of like about how greedy people are going to fall. And really the sun is the king. We're all revolving around the sun. It's not individual people running the show.
Well, talk about coded.
yeah, there's some puzzles to be solved in that one lyrically. I like that one.
I do too. And I think, at least what I'm thinking, when I was trying to pore over, well, what does this mean? And I'm not sure whether it matters to you, whether people even get what your songs are about. How important is that?
Well, I hope that people will take the time to think about it and put their own meaning on there. And I try to leave them open enough so that people can inject their own meaning to the songs, but also I don't want it to be so abstract that it's completely meaningless. So I want it to be, I just in general want the songs to evoke some kind of gut feeling in the listener. And even if they don't listen to what the words mean, I hope the melody sticks with them or something sticks with them.
Laura Veers is our guest today on the World Cafe. And are we going to the title track
yes.
next? Excellent.
July Flame.
July Flame.
Flame.
That's Laura Veers with the title track of her latest album called July Flame. Now, Laura, we spoke about 4 years ago, and I remember you saying that being a musician meant that you had to sacrifice some things, and you gave a list of things that you were sacrificing. You said relationships, you said a sense of rootedness, you were talking about not being able to do volunteer work or have a garden, et cetera, et cetera. And now it's 4 years later, you relocated from Seattle to Portland. You now have a partner, your longtime producer, Tucker Martine, and you're expecting a baby in a few months. Is it fair to say that you've given up those sacrifices, or do you think that in some way you're still going to have to make them?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the balance that you strike. Some musicians are gone touring 10 months a year, and that's going to they're going to sacrifice a sense of community at home and, you know, like taking care of their pet or their garden, you know. But if they're gone, like I try to be gone about 4 months a year, and I think I can maintain those things. Like, obviously the yard is a mess when I get back, but I can still have a vegetable garden, and my cat still recognizes me, and my friends kind of know whether to invite me to book club or not. So I feel like I've struck a balance, but if I decided to go out more and tour more, then I would be sacrificing certain things. But then you get other things, like the community of your people on the road and the community of people like in your crew, but also the people that you stay with, the friends you make in overseas. I mean, I'm like a link between so many of my family members, my extended family, because I see everybody three times a year. And otherwise I might only see my aunt once every 5 years, like on a special occasion or something. So I think there are sacrifices either way. And it's just part of being alive. And I don't know, I'm certainly going to be challenged by all of this. Or I will be certainly challenged by having a baby and trying to figure it all out. It's going to be a difficult balance, I'm sure, with two artist parents. But I just feel confident that we have the resources and the brains or creativity to figure it out and keep going as artists and having a family.
Now, you wrote the songs for the album before you got pregnant. Do any of the songs, now given that you are having a baby, have they changed their meaning for you at all?
Not so much. I mean, some of them change meaning over time, but really they're usually just as they are as I write them. They're in my mind, and then I put them out into the world, and then I don't really think about what they mean anymore. They're just songs.
Mm-hmm. So you get a certain distance from them.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Are there songs that, you know, with that distance can come a detachment? Are there songs that you don't, that you sing that you feel no attachment to anymore?
No, I choose the ones that I feel attached to or that I feel some emotional connection to so that I can convey that through the performance. Certainly I've probably, I don't know, I have 85 or something songs out on recordings, and many of them have lost their punch for me. So I forget how to play them, and I think fans are disappointed when they call them out at a show and I have no idea how to play it. I haven't played it in 5 years, but it means something to them, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. So I'm not going to remember how to play it. Some artists are great at remembering all their songs. Like Colin Molloy from the Decemberists is so good at just like pulling all of his songs out of a hat and remembering all the chord changes and lyrics. And I'm really not like that, unfortunately. But yeah, certain ones really hold. They have great staying power over 10 years. It's really neat to see that. And then other ones, they just, that like a year after the album's out, I feel like I maybe missed the mark a little bit and didn't quite get that depth of emotion or feeling that I was searching for.
Well, I know that you don't read your reviews, and pardon me if I'm getting too personal, just let me know. But there was a writer on the online All Music Guide, and he said some of the songs on July Flame were inspired by your relationship with Tucker Martine, and he called the relationship you were musing about a state of romantic bliss. But anyway, do you think it presents any challenges to work on a song with a person who may have inspired it?
Well, I mean, I'm going to remain mute on whether Tucker inspired any of those songs. But so I could just say it's a character. Like any, I mean, that's like a way of saying any of these songs could be a character and some of them could be me, but I'm not going to reveal which ones are which. And Tucker and I have never talked about it. So he doesn't know which ones are about him and which ones aren't, which ones are just a character. And so we don't even worry about that. We're really looking at these as, are they a substantial piece of art on their own? Is, like I said before, is the melody strong? Are these words resonating? Are there cliches we need to route out? What's the instrumentation going to be? And what's the overall feeling that this song is getting out into the world? And so, yeah, I mean, there is a balance to be struck with, certainly with, between us and our professional life and our romantic life. But for the most part, when we make a record, it's like a special time together because there's so much time apart. Like of this pregnancy, we'll have been apart 5 months of the 9 months. So because he's either gone working on a record somewhere or I'm on tour. So there's like such a special experience for us when we do get 3 months together to make a record. It's almost like a fun time for us, and not to say that it's like blissful and great all the time, but for the most part, it's an enjoyable thing for us to do together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it also sounds like you approach the songs in a more analytical way. It's not like you're sitting there sharing what this meant or that.
No,
meant
we
or...
never talk about meaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good for you. Laura Veers is our guest today. Her new album is called July Flame. Laura, what do you want to finish up with?
We are going to finish with a song called I Can See Your Tracks.
Beautiful.
I Can See Your Tracks, the tune from Laura Veers and her band, set up playing in our World Cafe studios. I'm David Dye, World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN, and NPR Music is produced at WXBN in Philadelphia at xbn.org. If you'd like to hear more World Cafe sessions, They are on our website, which is worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks a lot for listening. This is the World Cafe.